Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to another episode of Voices for Excellence. I am your host, Dr. Michael Connor, CEO and founder of the Agile Evolutionary Group, and of course, the proud host of VFE. And today's guest, it is with an absolute honor. His work is pretty much is lamented in every single thread or every single apparatus of the education ecosystem. That's why I am very excited today to have Dr. Norman Webb, who is, yes, is a part of everybody's academic vernacular, the depth of knowledge framework. Yes, we have the creator, the architect, and the thought master behind everything that we use to measure rigor, but also measure how we look at thinking and how now I want to be able to extend this conversation, this discussion with Dr. Webb of what this looks like in the AC stage of education. He has a historical background in education, working with many district leaders, teachers internationally, domestically, most recently served as a senior research scientist for the Wisconsin Center for Education Research. But of course, again, his work has been instrumental to not only my work, but your work as well. So it is an absolute honor to have Dr. Norman Webb here on VFE Season 3. Dr. Webb, wow, we're not worthy. How are you?
Well, that was quite an introduction, but thank you very much, Michael. I appreciate being here.
Oh, man, Dr. Webb, it is an honor. I remember, and I want you to clarify, because I don't know if you have heard this around the country or around the world, but I see people interfacing the knowledge taxonomies with your work of the DOK. I want to be able to part and parcel the difference for our audience or for my audience so that we can level set what is the knowledge taxonomies, but what is the depth of knowledge? Because you know that that's been, I would say every time I hear something like, no, there's a difference. And people want to hear what the difference is, not knowing what the difference is between the two. So we'd love for you to clarify that on VFE today, but we will get in an in-depth conversation. But as I stated before, it's just an absolute honor to have you here. I'm just going to ask the questions to be able to unpack everything that you have created, that you have researched from a scientific lens, as well as from an evidence-based lens, but more importantly, how to use your work, as I stated in the outset, with the AC stage of education. So are you ready, Dr. Webb? I'm just looking forward to this conversation.
Okay, let's do it. I'm ready for it.
Now, Dr. Webb, I have told multiple people that you were coming on VFE, and they said, I can't wait to hear what Dr. Webb's leadership signature song is. So this has been like the number one question that everybody wants. No, don't worry about the DOK. Don't worry about the science work of education. They want to know what your leadership song is. But you have, all kidding aside, you have impacted many education.
I hope you don't want me to sing it.
On VFB, Dr. Webb.
That's a hard question, Michael, to come up with a song that represents your academic work. But I appreciate being able to think about it a little bit. But you know, the song that I came up with was The Age of Aquarius.
Okay. Now, you know about Aquarius, Dr. Webb. I want to hear this because I'm an Aquarius.
There you go. It's Age of Aquarius because, you know, it talks about when Jupiter and Mars are aligned. And so it talks about the whole universe and the system when everything is in place with each other, that things are going to happen. Good things are going to happen. And so I like that song. Of course, that sort of dates my age too. To go back to the age of Aquarius, but it talks about a dawn. And where things are starting to begin and starting to use. And I think in education, it's hard to get anything new in education. But I think there are new ideas that come across and new ways of thinking about some of the old modes and old thinking. And so this notion of the age of Aquarius is that we're, and I believe that we are thinking about things in a little different way than we did before, and that that there's a new horizon, particularly with this use of technology. It's been around a while, but now you have artificial intelligence. You have it's moving much faster than it did before. And I think that that's something that's very relevant that we need to talk about. When I came up with the notion of depth of knowledge, I was very interested in trying to get a systemic approach to education where you have standards and you have curriculum and you have instruction and you have assessment, and this notion of where all of these pieces are fitting together. And that they are in alignment with each other. And so that a lot of my work came out of that notion of alignment of curriculum standards with assessment. And so that the DOK framework was a language system, was a way of of thinking about complexity. And how you can look at complexity of standards and how you can look at complexity of assessments and how you can check to see if they are really working together towards getting students to know the content as we want them to know them. I think it also relates to equity and fairness and pedagogy implications were all things that were important to think about. At that time, and I and my alignment model, I included all those, and so this notion of age of Aquarius, everything fitting together, was very, very critical to me, and that in come up with DOK, I would looked at a bunch of curriculum standards, and tried to sort out, you know, what. In these curriculum standards, what would identify different levels of complexity? And that's where I came up with the recall of information seemed to be a one set of standards that just required students to repeat information, to recall it, or even to recognize certain ideas and concepts. Another one dealt with the skills and concepts and more of comprehension. And then a third one dealt with a, more of an analysis and reasoning, and so it came out of the system. It came out of the analyzing analyzing the standards, and then I was able to put definitions, and that then led into applying it in a broader sense and with standards and in alignment. So that's my song.
Dr. Webb, I love it. Age of the Aquarius. Yes, I'm an Aquarius, so of course I'm going to celebrate that statement. But I want to highlight a statement that you stated directly after that, right? Technology has been around, and anytime that I'm conducting a workshop or leading institutes or even keynoting, I always say that AI, the definition of AI, has been around since 1956 by the man of John McCarthy, who defined pretty much AI, human intel or artificial intelligence acting and with human capabilities and characteristics. But the actual development of AI started in 1950 at Dartmouth College. So you're absolutely right when you said it's been around. But I really love, and we're going to unpack this later in some future questions. You highlighted the four tiers of your own work with the depth of knowledge, where I was having a conversation with somebody, and I was really contending that most of our schools, if you think about it universally, if we were to evaluate, and I'm using this in a very subjective notion, you would, of course, have this data around, do our schools move beyond the DOK1, DOK2 level, specifically in the catalogs that you identified with standards, curriculum, assessment, and evaluation? And how are we going to move to those DOK3, DOK4 levels if we truly want to reach equity and fairness, as you highlighted with that? But the alignment model, that I think that's one of the hardest things to do, specifically now when we think about alignment and coherence of structures and systems, standards, yeah, evaluation, assessment, and instruction, as you highlighted. But you talked briefly regarding your learning theory, which is the depth of knowledge framework. I hope I'm contextualizing it correctly, but what were some, Doc, lessons that you learned that you would provide leaders now regarding reform transformation, specifically with this node of alignment and standards, evaluation, assessment, instruction, so that we can create relevant learning environments for Generation Z and Generation Alpha?
Well, I think one of the things applying that lessons learned, I think that as you describe what I said to some degree, I think that one of the lessons I learned, and of course I did this about 30 years ago, and over this period of 30 years, things have become more apparent to me that I think are important to talk about, kinds of things that are lessons, what lessons are learned. And a lot of these came out with misconceptions for DOK. One of the misconceptions, for example, is there's a chart that's a circle, and people put in just the verbs in the quadrants in the circle, and that's that really doesn't communicate, because what makes something complex is more than just looking at the verbs. Mm-hmm. And the actions, you have to look at the context, you have to look at how it's being used. And so I really see that, one lessons learned is that it's more than just the verbs. Mm-hmm. Another thing that was the difference between complexity and difficulty, I think, mm-hmm, is a very, very important concept that we came up with. That people were didn't distinguish between what was difficulty and what was difficult and what was complex, and sometimes they would say difficulty is a word that people use in assessment a lot. They judge what makes something difficult fewer number of students answer an item correctly, then they consider that a difficult item. And so difficulty is related to really the percentage of students answer an item correctly. And a lot of times they interpret that as being, that means that that is more complex. But we know, and I think most people would understand that there's a lot of things that might happen to get an item or make an item where students will not answer it correctly, that is other than just the notion of that makes it complex. It could be that they didn't have the opportunity to learn the material. It could be that that the item was poorly constructed. Those make an item difficult, but it does not make an item complex. Another issue, I think, is the progression of learning. Because I use levels, level one, level two, level three, level four, people associate this with what they should be in terms of teaching. Instruction should be at a level. We start with level one, then we go to level two, then we go to level three, then we go to level four. And I think one of the lessons learned and to communicate is that instruction and learning does not go in levels. You can use these definitions to describe what it is you want students to do and interpret that, but it doesn't imply that you have to start with the most simple and then go to the higher order, the complex. I've seen people talk about where they have problem-based learning or they have project-based learning, where they begin with a big project, which I would consider a DOK 4, extended thinking. And right. And that might be a good place to start for instruction. And then they go and they learn the basic skills that they have to know in order to do that project. They might do some analysis along the way. And so I think that's a very, very important concept that I've learned that a lot of people misinterpreted my model, thinking that there is it's a linear sequence and that they apply it to learning, which I think is not right.
Right.
So those are some of the things that I think are lessons learned that would be important to point out.
Great. Thanks for that, Dr. Webb, because that provides clarity, right, with some of the broad misnomers about the depth of knowledge framework, the utility of it, and then common misconceptions in education. One that I do want you to expand on, because, again, this is coming specifically from the outset of today's episode, is I want to ask a question to clarify, because I want to be very simplistic with no interpretations as we move forward for all my BFE viewers. The knowledge taxonomies, Bloom's taxonomy, can you clarify how your framework is not mutually exclusive with the knowledge taxonomies or Bloom's taxonomies theory and framework?
Well, I think they're related to each other. In my graduate work at Stanford University and math education, we studied Bloom's taxonomy. It was like I like to sort of joke that we say the Pledge of Allegiance to Bloom's taxonomy when we get in, because that was a big thing at that time. And so I have a high regard for the people who put it together. And they're some of the best minds that we had at that time, but what they did is they structured it and they primarily used verbs and to describe what was going on. They did not make a distinction between content areas. That they had with the idea. I think there was one note that Benjamin Bloom did in the original book that said that if he had more time, he would do that. But it came out that it was sort of to be applied across all content areas, and that they had they used the word taxonomy, which, as I've already mentioned before, it sort of indicates a hierarchy. It indicates a sequence of this is the very basic, and then it builds upon the next level, builds upon the next level, and so forth. And so when I came and started to think about coming up with alignment, a tool that could be used to looking at alignment. There's a lot about the Bloom's taxonomy that did not quite fit. And mm-hmm. and so that's why I came up with these four levels, which I called depth of knowledge. And I wasn't sure where this was going to go at the time that I wrote it. I didn't think people would attend to it very much. And I'm sort of very amazed that people are still talking about depth of knowledge. But what I came up with where, as I said, I looked at the content standards and used that in order to try to describe what I thought were different levels of complexity. And I used the word level, and sometimes I think I maybe should have used category, but I used the word level. and it still applies to a certain degree. And so I think that one of the things that the people that wrote Bloom's Taxonomy did not have available to them at that time was cognitive psychology. They had behaviorism was very, very prevalent to them. They were talking about that, in fact, about the same time that came around, and it's about the same time as you're talking about the AI, what was developed back in the 1950s, early 1950s. And so they didn't really consider about that learning and ideas are really like a network, more of a network where things interact with each other. And so I think that interaction to me was very, very big and important. And so as I describe, as I think about learning and as I think about using words to describe what goes on in a standard or what is expected by that, I was thinking from a network point of view, how things are related to each other, and so I think that helped in terms of coming up with a definition, like for analytic thinking, level three for me was ideas, people building or connecting ideas with each other, and so that I think. Is trying to be reflect. There's a revised Bloom taxonomy that does a little bit better thinking about the relationship of ideas and this networking that I'm describing. But they still have thought about it as a taxonomy, and they still use it very heavily based upon verbs. For me to have something to determine that at a certain level of complexity, you have to think about the context. You have to think about what action, how that action is being done. You have to take about to have to take in consideration more than just the particular action. So I know that I'm very influenced by the Blooms. And so there is a relationship because it's just in my nature. And I think also just the what we're focusing on is complexity. And that complexity been around a long time.
Yes,
And
that's
so people look at it and they come up with these different frameworks. And I came up with four levels that I thought was very practical because I was looking at it from a curriculum point of view. Not a psychological point of view, a curriculum point of view of how do I analyze standards and what is the language that I could use to analyze standards and what is the language I can use to analyze assessment.
Fascinating, Dr. Webb. Fascinating just to hear you give the lessons learned. And I like to say a doctoral class in 5 minutes with your explanation of the knowledge taxonomies and your work, of course, focusing on the level of complexity. You know, I find it ironic, Dr. Webb. I always reference the Two Sigma problem study that he conducted in 1985, you know, around or the Two Sigma problem study, where he identified, I think that it would be two standard deviations that students would grow if they reached this level of one-to-one tutoring. Now I basically say it's basically impossible, you know, to not achieve that, where I call the two sigma prosperity, where now there's the focus of AI complimenting the teacher, where that two standard deviation should be reached in that personal context. But whenever I bring that up, the 1985 study around Benjamin Bloom, they're like, "Oh, who's that?" I'm like, "Oh, Bloom's taxonomy." They're like, "Oh, okay, that's the thing they know by Bloom's taxonomy." And there was plenty other studies and work that Benjamin Bloom conducted that's so relevant in education, and we still talk about it today. And I just love the fact how you said, and I quote, "I didn't really start this to create it as what it is now, Dr. Webb. And your work is still referenced and is still steadfast in education, so relevant. And just loved hearing your explanation of complexity versus difficulty. And that's another one. We could spend another hour on that. But Web Align, Dr. Webb, I want to be able to talk about that because you work with many state education agencies. You work with many districts as well. But if you can you unpack the core work of web alignment through a lens of depth of knowledge? And what would be some of the expected outputs that if a state district or a school use Web Align in a partnership to really change instruction standards, assessments within their learning organizations or above?
I think Web Align is a term that we coined for a group of people who work on doing the alignment and using DOK. So it really is a major part of our work, and this is associated with the University of Wisconsin, but it's not done under the previous of Wisconsin, University of Wisconsin. It's a nonprofit organization. And so we conduct alignment studies for states. And that's been a major part of our work. And that states have had to show alignment between curriculum standards and assessment as a requirement of giving money from the Department of Education. It began with the No Child Left Behind Act and the evolutions of the acts after that. And there's still a requirement that they show that there is alignment study, that there is alignment. And so that's been a bit important part of our work. I think that, well, what I think is one of the benefits of doing alignment study and having an independent person conduct the alignment study is to be able to be sure that you are assessing what you think you should be assessing. And we find that a lot of times we have find assessments that are made by a state that do not reach a level of complexity that they expect to get out of the standards. And so that there needs to be some modification. We also are working more now with a lot of states have big item banks and that and even computer adaptive testing is something that we work with where we try to find a way of analyzing that and communicating that be sure that what the state professes that students ought to be learning is that that's being assessed. And I think that is we spent a lot of effort and time in terms of trying to come up with ways of working with the state. I have a tool that's called the WAT, the Web Alignment Tool. And that we use that in order to do the analysis and the process that we are engaged in. That's also part of this Web Align group. Another thing that we do, Michael, we do workshops on depth of knowledge, and I think that there's a very valuable it's very valuable for teachers to be able to make distinctions. Of these different levels of complexity. And so that we have we try to get teachers to understand the definitions of depth of knowledge. And that's something that you just cannot do in one workshop or sitting down and but it's something that requires if we talk about it, they get sort of an aha. Yeah, I hear that. But to really apply it, they have to think about now what it is, what are the expectations, what is it that they really are asking students to achieve, to attain, and that what level of complexity is it? What level of and how do we distinguish the wording here with the wording in another statement? And it re really requires, we find that it requires an interaction between teachers to communicate. And one of the things that we've observed is that having these definitions help teachers to then hone in on what it is that we really expect students to know and do. And so I think it also helps administrators to know a little bit more about how they can communicate to their teachers and how they communicate to their staff. So it's a language system is what we're talking about with DLK. And it helps people make distinctions that are very, very important that sometimes are hard to decide, and it helps people to then focus, I think, more towards what it is that's most important and what is not so important.
Yeah, and Dr. Webb, really appreciate your work broadly because knowing the alignment piece is so critical. I think that is it has to be a profound approach with defining any apparatus or tenet in education, specifically expectations of students, right, with the level of complexity. But you talk about teachers being able to have this distinction with the levels of complexity or the level of complexity. Can you, for level setting purposes, can you go through each of the levels, DOK 1, level 1, level 2, level 3, and level 4, so that we have a universal level set understanding of that and maybe provide some type of context or examples within those levels, so that now when people are going to go back and look at the DOK, they can be able to use this episode to look at the artifact, look at standards, look at whether it be curriculum, whether it be assessment, and then using this podcast simultaneously for support.
The level one is go, as I said, I went through and called my way through a set of standards. Level one are really very, very basic operation, mental operations, is where they're asked to recall information of a particular idea. Like it might be that they recall a definition, and they have to say it verbatim or close to verbatim to what they're being asked. And it's where something that is like I use an example of you want your child to know their telephone number and to which number to call. Of course, now they have their iPhones that have their but not everybody has that.
That might be complex or difficult because now you have the iPhone. You gotta remember anything.
but at one time, it was important for people to know their telephone number or
Yes,
know their address to say where they can where they have to go. But this would be something that I would call would be a level one. It's something that you need to know automatically. And there are things that you want students to know automatically. And so that this is very basic thinking. It doesn't require a lot of mental processing. But it's still very, very important. And this is another thing I think, Michael, that to point out is that I think that all four levels are important. Probably the degree of what you emphasize at one particular time or the other, but I think all important are there's some things that you want students to know automatically. Then I went on and found these items that dealt more with procedural knowledge, where they had to apply multiple steps in order to do to solve a problem. Or they had to have a certain skill level of and I also threw in this the notion of comprehension where they are looking at the concept, and they have to have an understanding of conceptual knowledge, and they have to be able to comprehend a text that they are able to look at multiple indicators within the text to give them an idea of what the main message is that they are trying to read and trying to understand. And so that this is where they're looking at details and they're drawing some inferences from that, but it's not what I would call an analysis. It's not a heavy rigor, but it's where that they are using bits of information, pulling that together and making sense of it. Sense making is another, would be another word to talk about level two. Then a level three, this is, you know, a lot of, when back 30 years ago, a lot of the standards were level ones and level twos. And they did not have very many that required anything beyond that in complexity. And so a lot of our educational system at that time were just recall of information and comprehension and doing procedural knowledge.
Yeah.
Then I looked at some other ones that really required students to do some thinking. And thinking by that is that they had to break things apart. They had to put things back together again. They had to analyze. They had to maybe draw, use some sort of a logic process, like in mathematics, where you have to use some logic to come up with a proof to a theorem. But it's heavy reasoning, and it's not, it's where in mathematics, and mathematics education is my field that I feel most comfortable in, that we call it non-routine problem solving. Non-routine, that is that you don't know exactly what you're supposed to be doing when you read the problem. You have to read the problem two or three times. You have to then ask questions, and you have to probe and in order to get an idea of what direction you need to take it in order to do this analysis. Each content area have this. In reading and language arts, you have where you have to come up with different ways of communicating ideas to somebody. If you're writing or you're reading and you're trying to really say, what is the meaning of this particular text? How does the writing of Dostoevsky, how does that compare to Tolstoy, and how are they the same and how are they similar to each other? What are the indicators that would tell you that these two authors or any two authors have similar backgrounds, and so that you're really producing something new when you come up with this level three. And then, as I said, I thought that after I've gone through that, and I thought having these three levels, I thought that was enough. In terms of coming up with complexity, that we only needed three. But then I saw a standard that sort of took me back, and it said we want our students to change the world, and which was very, very big. Enterprise to have your student chase the world. And it was a very valid expectation from education. We want our students to chase the world. But then I started to think about more and look in more of these curriculum standards and instruction and text. And that's where we came up with this notion of extended thinking. It's a little different from the other three. Extended thinking is something, and I use the word extended because it's extended in space and time. It might take a lot of time to be able to do one of these projects. It would also Might take you have to do heavy thinking. You might have to use a lot of different equipment to come up. It's like doing a scientific experiment where you have to design the experiment. You have to come up with the apparatus that you'll use. You have to come up with the questions you're going to be asking, and you might have to do it more than one time, three or four times before you get it right. And then you have to draw conclusions that come out of it. That's an extended thinking problem to me. I don't think that we would all have that we would do an extended thinking problem all the time. I think that we would do that once. I heard that one state or one school district, the superintendent were trying to increase the rigor of their educational system. And so they told the teachers, "We want you to do a DOK 4 activity every day." And I heard that, and I said, I just couldn't understand it, because they didn't understand that you just can't do a DOK activity, 4 activity in a day. It takes more engagement than that. And so I think these 4 levels have sit for now. It's been 30 years, and I think there have been some people that criticize and reflect, but I think basically they hold true about and seem to be applicable to looking at curriculum, looking at standards, looking at assessment, and being able to make distinctions. I do think that the definitions probably need to be tweaked some about environment, as environments change. And even, I think you talk about the different generations, like Generation Z and the generations Alpha. Those kids are a little bit different than the ones where I came from. And so I think that there probably is reasons to tweak these definitions some, but the basic idea of these 4 levels of complexity, I think still will be applicable 50 years from now as it is today.
Absolutely. Thank you for that explanation, Dr. Webb. Clearly identifying each of the levels, as well as the supporting elements within those levels as well. But you touched upon actually the next question I wanted to get into is Generation Z, Generation Alpha. Generation Z, born 1997 through 2010, Generation Alpha falls in at 210 to 224. When I think of schools now, sophomores, juniors, and seniors are current Gen Zs. Freshmen and below are Gen Alphas. You said it specifically, right? And you said it distinctively. They are different. How does now depth of knowledge and the web learning theory align to these learners, as you have already identified that there needs to be some minor adaptations to the framework itself?
I think you're talking about my grandkids.
Yeah, my
Because
son, yes.
I have two granddaughters that are Generation Z, and I have a granddaughter and a grandson who's Generation A, Alpha. And so you're talking about that, and I do think, and I actually I have one granddaughter here where I am now, and that what I think is this this new generation, new generation Z is that they are very community. They like collaboration. They like working together. And I read one place that they said that they were looking at source of information. They thought they would say telephone or other or some sort of website or Facebook or whatever. And they said that they like the best source of information they like is a person. is talking to a person and communicating to a person. And I think they also are very pragmatic. Their attention span might not be as big as other ones, so they like things to happen right away. But I think that also they don't like to do wasted work.
Right.
They don't like to sit around and twiddle their thumbs and doing something that doesn't have meaning to them. And so I think that this depth of knowledge is very useful to start for teachers to look at what it is that I'm really trying to get these students to learn.
Yeah. Yeah.
And at what level of complexity am I really trying to get these students to learn? How do I look at these? And I have to interpret, if I'm given the curriculum standards that come from the state and say, these are the expectations, but I need to look at those things and I need to be more efficient at what I do. I need to be able to intensify the work that I do and the expectation and that it needs to be clear to these students. These students don't want to just twiddle their thumb. They want to have something to do that's meaningful. And I think that and I think they're probably much more accepting than my age group. We just were like, they would just feed us information, and we didn't question very much. But I think
right.
this younger generation is much more involved in questioning, and I think they and I think that one of the things is that they can even learn about DOK.
Mm-hmm.
I think that one use, or like I heard one use of DOK was they changed DOK to a verb. We're going to DOK this essay, and we're going to DOK, we're going to look at it from levels of complexity.
Yeah.
And I thought, wow, that's cool. But
yeah.
But they could do that, and yeah. They understand the definitions themselves.
Yeah.
And so I think that there's still, as I said, I think the four levels are sort of conical. It they're there for a framework, but and as we look at the definitions, we might say, maybe if we think about AI and people engaging in AI, what are the mental processes that's going on in the person's mind? How does that vary what they deal with complexity? And you could do, like, I think in AI like if they have somebody write an essay for them or for a particular assignment, and they turn it over to the computer, and the computer generates that. That doesn't take very much thinking in order to do that. But if they have to reread what they're saying, is this really relevant to the exercise? And they have to critique it. Then they're getting into they're using AI. They're getting into a level of complexity, and so the teacher, by having these definitions, a teacher then can look at that situation and have words to say, they're really only doing a level two. They're really only looking at a comprehension rather than what we want, what we would like them to do, that would be higher. And
yeah.
So I think that it's sort of exciting to think about the younger generations and how much resources they have available to them.
Yeah.
But you always have to have ways of sifting. You have to have ways of making distinctions. You have to have ways of focusing. And that's where I think this language system is helpful.
Amazing, Dr. Webb, because I love the fact how you brought in about these attributes about Generation Z, which is completely true. Everywhere that I go, I think that Gen Z students, they prefer relevance over compliance, right? When I always talk about Generation Alpha having a very short attention span. So we have to be very deliberate with instruction, and also they want engagement, authentic and true engagement. But
Yes.
one of the key attributes and dispositions that I love about Generation Alpha is that they have a global mindset. And you find second and third graders that want to exercise their voice. I mean, I see second and third graders, 8 and 9 year olds, going in with their list about things that they want change within their learning organization and meeting with the superintendent. I was Dr. Webb. When I was in school, I was a senior in high school. I didn't know who the superintendent was. Dr. Storm, how are you? Hope all is well. But I didn't know an 18-year-old senior, but we have 8 and 9 year olds meeting with seniors, I'm sorry, meeting with their superintendents
Right.
and executive
Right.
leaders within their district, advocating for change. Dr. Webb, last question. Now, I'm going to try to lead you to three words, but I highly doubt I can. But what three words do you want today's VFB audience, Dr. Webb, to leave with regarding a new vision for the education ecosystem and the AC stage of education after COVID-19?
Okay, three words. I think complexity is definitely a big word for me. And so I think that complexity is very critical as we go on today, as we work today and into the future. The second word is coherence. I went back to the age of Aquarius where we talk about all the pieces fitting together, the planets. I think that's coherence. That's related to alignment, but I think that our students and I liked how you used the word authenticity, where they really want authentic education. They will have a much more universal point of view, but you've got to be able to put together in a coherent way. And that's going to be our challenge. That's going to be a challenge in the future. And I think DOK has a role in that. And then the third word I would use is clarity. Clarity. And because I think that DOK for me and it clarifies what it is that we want students to be able to do and what it is we want students to be able to know. And so I think that that also is a very, very important part of my work is trying to help teachers to clarify what they do.
Thank you, Dr. Webb. These words are so essential and imperative with how we move forward in the AC stage of education. Complexity, a word that I'm still trying to achieve in my work with regards to supporting systems as well as ministries, coherence, and then clarity, having that clarity in education. Dr. Webb, thank you so much for this episode. I got about 6 pages of notes about just writing it down, listening, taking it all in. But for my audience, Dr. Webb, if they want to be able to contact you or to be able to explore Webb Align with greater depth, what are the emails or social media networks that they'll be able to find you at?
Well, you can we have a website and Web Align and that's WEBB and then is capital ALIGN and dot com. I think that they can go to that website and get access to the definitions that we have and find me. So that would be the place where I'd recommend people going. I have a colleague, Sarah Christofferson, who is the manager of Web Align and the director of that, and she's very responsive. And so I think a lot of people go to her too. But I think that the best way to find us is on go to Web Align website.
Thank you, Dr. Webb. And I am sure after this episode, there will be many more questions, as well as, I like to say, extended and catalytic questions to deepen and shift the work. Dr. Norman Webb, thank you so much for coming on VFE. It has been an absolute honor, one of the best hours of my week.
Okay. Good to talk to you, Michael. It's good and appreciate all you do.
Thank you, Dr. Webb. And on that note, onward and upward, everybody. Have a great evening.